unapologetically and emphatically, I want to state that this body of believers stands behind the superintendent of schools and the other officials of the school who dealt with that matter. They got A++ in my book on how they handled it, okay? And I taught school law for some years, and so I know what the law says also. And the Establishment Clause, it's become such a big issue, says you cannot promote nor inhibit the free exercise of religion. And my position has always been, okay, so that they have shackled teachers and others who come into the school with the prohibit part, but you cannot defy the representation that a godly teacher gives before a classroom. And it is permissible and will be permissible if a student has an inquiry of a teacher, that teacher has a right to answer that question. All right? So I wrote to Dr. Berry and I said, here's my advice. I said something to him. I said, and tell the guy from Wisconsin to shut up and go back where he lives and mind his own business. So I want you to know where we as a body stand on that whole issue, okay? All right. We've got all the legal stuff out of the way. All right, let's go. 1 Peter 4:9 this morning is where we are. As Peter is writing to the elect exiles, I'll read this verse, and that's as far as we're going to get this morning. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. In verse 9, then, what I just read, Peter is continuing to charge those who have been changed by the preaching of the gospel with what their lives are to be. Those who used to live according to the flesh, he said earlier, who live in sensuality and passions and drunkenness and orgies and drinking parties and lawless idolatry, that's what you used to be. The gospel was then preached to you. And the result is you now live in the Spirit the way God does. So there is a change, a radical, observable change from those who lived, which was all of us, like the Gentiles lived, and then those who live according, live in the Spirit the way God does. And that was because the gospel was preached, Peter tells us. That's the only way that we can come to that life, living in the Spirit the way God does, is that the gospel, the good news, that Jesus Christ, the very Son of God, came and gave His life in a sacrificial way on the cross. His blood was shed for the sins of the world. That's the only way that this change can occur. So the gospel is the reason for the change, and the gospel changes lives. Folks, if we have any message at all, it's that message, the gospel. And you say, well, that's kind of, you know, elementary stuff, and that's kind of, you know, you want to be more trendy now, and you want to speak to felt needs. No, 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 no. The reason that those people have those felt needs and all is because they're not living in the gospel. The gospel is not old news. It is the only news that is worth forthtelling. So don't ever be ashamed to start with the gospel. Because today, if you don't start with the gospel, then you can't go beyond that because you don't know if you're talking to a saved person or a lost person. So that's what Peter, I believe, is emphasizing here. And so Peter has told us some of these changes. One change we spent some time a few weeks back about, and that was that we are aware that the end of all things is at hand. Those who live in the Spirit the way God does, we have, I believe, an innate knowledge that the end of all things is at hand. He also told us that those who have changed lives, who live in the Spirit the way God does, that we are self-controlled because we have a renewed mind. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. We now have the mind of Christ. And that mind of Christ is a renewed mind. and everything is filtered through our mind from our spirit, which is holy in His eyes and perfect in His eyes, our spirit, that our new spirit influences our renewed mind. And so what we do now is living in the Spirit the way God does. We look like Jesus when we live because of what goes on in our mind. He told us we are self-controlled. That self-controlled is not the old self, it's dead, but that self-controlled is the new self that's controlling all that we think, say, or do. And He also told us that we are sober-minded, contrasted with the former erratic, wild, impulsive, out-of-control mind and the resulting activities that come from that. And then last week, if you were with us, we saw that if we have been changed by the gospel and that we live in the Spirit the way God does, we love one another fervently. All right? Well, this morning, we're going to have, this is part four, living in the Spirit the way God does, four. All right? 3 points this morning. First, confession. Secondly, context. And third, command. All right? In verse 9, Peter tells us that one who has been changed by the gospel shows hospitality to one another without grumbling. Now, it's important at this time that I issue to you a full disclosure on my part. I'm not the best example of this verse. All right? I'm near the end, or maybe I am the end. I'm certainly... not a good example of this change that Peter's talking about of showing hospitality to one another. I'm not the best of any of the others that he's mentioned either, by the way, but certainly not of this one. You see, I'm pretty content in my own flesh. That's kind of the way I'm wired. My idea of a good day is to get up and I'm retired now, as I've told you, and spend 2 to 3 hours in the Word, and then get up and go out and spend a day's work by myself, okay? And at the end of the day, that's been a pretty good day for me. And so you can tell just from my confession there that what Peter is saying probably hit me right between the eyes when I read this verse 9. Don't misunderstand me now. I love people. I'm not anti-people. I love people. I want to help people if at all possible and get an opportunity to do that ongoingly. The four elders, I speak for all of us, okay? But I'm speaking myself in this confession because they can confess on their own if they want to. I literally shed tears when you all suffer. And I don't have answers, and I don't know what to tell you. And I literally shed tears because of the burdens and the cares and concerns you have. But I've never been a crowd person. I'm just not. I'm not a crowd person. A social person, maybe you might call it. That's just not me. So when it comes to this thing of hospitality, I have a lot of work to do. I confess that to you this morning. If you're looking for examples of hospitable people, we have a lot of hospitality stars in this congregation. And you know, I thought first of all, in fact I did early one morning, I said to Joanna, I said, I just sat down there and I said, name me some hospitable people that practice hospitality in our body. And she started rattling off some names. We all know who they are, okay? So there's no need for me to tell you who they are. Because if they are genuinely hospitable, you know who they are. And we have a number of hospitality stars among us. As I pondered this change that Peter's talking about called hospitality, I reached some conclusions. So don't get up and walk out, okay? But just hang with me. Most of the hospitable people, as we define it in our culture, are women. That's not sexist, all right? That's just observation. But it's not a gender thing. It's not confined to women. Generally, women just like to get together more than men do. All right? And I don't know what that is, but that's just an observation. Confession is good for the soul, and I hope you've heard my heart today on this. I can't stand up here before you and say, now do what I do when it comes to hospitality. If you do, you'll spend all day at home by yourself, like I do, all right? Thus, I venture into this study this morning, leaning heavily on the grace of God. The next point I call context. It's at this point that I was really panicking before the Lord. And I said, Lord, what am I going to do? I can't be credible before these folks on Sunday because I know who I am and I know how I operate and those kind of things. And I said, I'm not going to stand up there and be a hypocrite. Help me on this. Help me. And so one thing that I believe he reminded me of was the context of what Peter was saying when he said it. Now, Peter is writing this about 65 A.D. This is north of the crucifixion, okay, but south of the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D. And Peter's probably in prison in Rome when he's writing this letter. So this is years beyond the crucifixion of Jesus, so that whole time period. Plus, the other thing that we have to understand is that for hundreds of years, really into the colonial era of this country, culture was basically static. So what Peter is writing here would apply into the Middle Ages. I just finished that book on the life of Luther, and it didn't sound a lot different than what Peter and the disciples were doing when they lived. It just didn't progress. All right? So, further context helps me, so I'll share that with you. He's describing this change to be hospitable to these people. He's speaking to the elect exiles living in Gentile country. We always want to remember that. Actually, there are two changes that he's dealing with. First of all, is showing hospitality. But secondly, showing hospitality without grumbling. I hope we caught that. There's really two changes that he's talking about. You see, to grumble when showing hospitality reveals probably a works mentality. Well, I have to do this, I don't want to do it. But, and that's the grumbling that goes in. And the reason that the person may show hospitality, if they are grumbling about it, is so that they can, say, well, I checked this off and I'm doing that one. That's not what he's talking about. Instead of being hospitable, the grumbler sees this hospitality as forced behavior, and that in itself contradicts the love that he's just been talking about in verse 8. Love one another fervently. You cannot love one another fervently and grumble when you're hospitable toward them. Okay? All right. Now, the Greek wording for hospitality literally means being hospitable or loving strangers. And it was that last definition or application of the Greek wording that the Hallelujah Chorus started in there in my study, and things started clicking. This loving strangers. And so I being a historian of sorts, I dove into this from a historical perspective of hospitality in the time that Peter was writing. Their culture is not what our culture is today. So that changes the whole meaning of hospitality probably. In our culture today, inviting folks over would be a hospitable thing to do, or showing hospitality. Having a party, getting together with my friends. All of that would probably fit our definition of hospitality in 2018 in Bolivar, Missouri. I would submit to you today not what Peter was talking about. The context that Peter is writing from or talking about has nothing to do with being social. It has everything to fervently loving others at the point of their need. To delve further into this context, Peter writing to the people that he's writing to, these people living away from the Jewish enclave strongholds of Galilee and Judea and specifically Jerusalem, he's writing to those people who are actually going to be the people who need to show hospitality that maybe the people down south in Judea and Galilee and those places don't need to. In the day that Peter's writing, there were people travel away from home. But it wasn't like it is today. You go out on 13 Highway today, or I-44 especially, and we are a mobile society, to say the least. I mean, it's bumper-to-bumper traffic, I guarantee you, down on I-44. And it will be most of the day into the night. And those people in those cars are going somewhere. And so we are a traveling society. And Kelly reminded me this morning that an entire industry has been built around the fact that people travel. The hotel, motel, and on and on like that. Billions of dollars a year. That's not what was going on in Peter's day. People didn't travel away from home anywhere close, not even on the same planet with what we do today. Because traveling at that time was costly to do so. And if you traveled, you walked. You know, and you can walk 10 to 12 miles a day. On a good day, maybe. And so, traveling then, people had to have a very intense need to go from here to there. And so, it was costly for them because they had to take provisions with them that would be provisions that were to be used from where they were. They had to rob from that to live to get to the place that they were going. So, it was a very costly thing to do, and it was a dangerous thing to do. There were highwaymen, they called them, thieves, hiding out along the routes, and there weren't a lot of routes. You just didn't go cross country. You stayed on the traveled routes. One, there would be some safety there, perhaps, and you traveled in groups if possible, because there were these thieves all along the routes that were going to waylay you and take your stuff and leave you in the ditch. In fact, Jesus told us a story about that, didn't he? The guy that was going from the road from Jericho to Jerusalem, and he fell among the thieves, and they robbed him and pitched him in the ditch, and he was left there to die. This was just a traveler. And the three folks that came by, Jesus told about each of them and their response, and then he told about the last one who came by, the Good Samaritan, who took care of the guy, brought him back from death, carried him to the nearest place where he could be cared for until he came back by and he footed the whole bill. All right? That was a traveler. That whole account is set in the context of this thing traveling in that day. Now, there were public houses, inns, if you want to call them that, but typically they were not all the way along the route, okay? But they were in the major cities or larger towns. And those inns, those public houses, were few in number, and they themselves were dangerous. Because what was going on in many of those public houses or inns were the same thing that Peter was saying, that's what the Gentiles used to do. The sensual passions, drinking, orgies, parties, and all that kind of stuff. A lot of that was going on in those public houses. And so a believer, a follower of Jesus Christ, is going to stop in at one of those places and the temptations are going to be off the chart. So that really wasn't a good place to be. I couldn't help but think at this point of travelers have always been, from basically, when you open the pages of the Word, you soon bump into this whole issue of people needing to travel. They always have. And the one that I had to stop and take a special notice of was those travelers that came to Abraham when he was under the oaks at Mamre, and he was just out there under the oak, okay? And three men approached where he was. Now, he was a Bedouin, okay? He didn't have a house, didn't have a home. He just moved around, pitched their tents, and they moved until they grazed that part of the landscape down. Then they picked up and moved on, okay? So he doesn't have a place. But this is where he is at this time, and these three men approached him. And immediately, Abraham knew who they were. And they came with a message. I'll get there in just a second. But as soon as they approach, okay, Abraham pops up and he says, go kill that out in the field and fix these cakes and provide a feast for these travelers who have stopped by my place today. It just so turns out that those three travelers, one was Jesus. I believe this is one of the times that the pre-incarnate Christ appears. One was Jesus, and the other two were angels. And Jesus brought with him the message that Sarah's going to have a baby. And both Sarah and Abraham are over 90. And the other thing that he said to Abraham, the Lord, was that I'm going to wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm going to destroy it. And then Abraham took pause, and he said, he knew Lot was over there, living in Sodom. And he said, if you find 50 righteous people, will you spare the city? And the Lord said, yeah, okay. He got him down to 5, all right? Couldn't find 5. And so then, if you'll pay attention, this is about traveling, trust me, okay? Jesus went back to be with the Father, and the two angels went on to Sodom. And when they got to Sodom, where did they stay? In the home of hospitable Lot. And so the angels came into Lot's house and were staying there in a very typical fashion that travelers would follow for thousands of years down to the time that Peter is talking about what he's talking about. And I'll finish the story so that I don't leave it hanging out there. But the two angels were there, and then all of the men of Sodom show up at Lot's door and said, send us out those two new guys in your house. And Lot is freaking out at this point because he knows who they are. And he knows what the guys outside the door wanting to come out are going to do. And I just pop myself in the forehead when I read this. Lot said, no, take my two daughters instead. What kind of dad is that? Well, the angels, praise God for what they did, struck them all blind. All of those men out there in that crowd wanting them to come out to them, they were all blinded, wandering around in darkness. And I got to think about that. That was probably a blessing because they couldn't see what was coming when the hailstones and the fire fell. You know? I don't know. That's just what I came up with. All right. Traveling was a dangerous thing to do. It was something that was dangerous going, and it was dangerous perhaps when you got there, unless there was somebody to invite you in to their house. So temptations were always in the face of the traveler. There were constant danger. So the believers that traveled as they went from church to church, now don't think when they went from church to church, James River Assembly down in Springfield. That's not where the church was. All right? It wasn't even a place like Wellspring. It was a house. It's where the church met. Or in a lot of places, they just met out in the woods and had church out there. I wonder where we got from that to, I'll pick on them again, James River Assembly or Wellspring built, you know. I'm thankful the Lord has given us this. I truly am. But folks, my confession again, far too much money is built on bricks and mortar in this world when it comes to building churches. All right? So don't tell your assembly friends I'm picking them. I'm not, okay? Go to Second Baptist. It's even probably worse. They've got the stained glass that goes to the ceiling and all that kind of stuff. All right. If this is where God lives, in the church, that's why they all the stuff goes on, I guess, okay? Okay. But I checked. He doesn't live in houses built with our hands. Okay. Enough there. All right. All right. So they went from church to church. Literally, they would go from house to house. You know, the missionary journeys of Paul. And you know the other travelers of that day, Paul and Silas and Apollos. And there were several of those people traveling around ministering in the churches. But they were going from house to house. Typically, they would carry messages with them. In fact, a lot of the New Testament after Acts would be the letters that Paul and Peter and others were writing that were literally carried by a courier from church to church as they would travel spreading the gospel and supporting the believers that were beginning to believe in these places. They traveled to minister. And when they did, they had to have a place to stay. They had to have a roof over their head. Now, if they traveled any distance, they spent most of the nights getting there out in the countryside under the stars. But when they got to where they were going, then they would seek accommodations in the homes of the people who were members of the particular body of believers. So a traveler might stay for days or months with them. The book of Titus closes, Paul is writing to Titus, and he's writing there, and he said, I've decided to spend the winter in Nicopolis. And I bet the folks in Nicopolis are saying, you know, he's going to stay the whole winter there. And so this is so different than overnight stays at somebody. This was a major commitment on the part of these people who were showing hospitality to the traveler. I don't even see it as the same as what we're dealing with today. And you'll remember that Jesus, along with his 12 disciples, spent at least a week, probably more, staying at Bethany with probably Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. A whole week, 12 guys are at my house. I mean, apparently they ran out of things to eat because Jesus had to try to get the fig, you know, on the way to the temple. That I don't know. But think about that. Spent days out there in Bethany living with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. We're guessing as who it is. Jesus and the 12 disciples. Paul, Silas, Barnabas, all of those guys traveled, and there were many others. And the travel was good because they were taking the gospel to people and encouraging believers now, because all kind of sects had risen to compromise or water down the gospel. The Gnostics and all those people were out there, and so they had to have human representation among them to encourage them in the faith. This is the infancy of Christendom and the church. This travel would be costly to the traveler. I've already established that, I hope. And to ease that burden, they would stay in these homes, which meant that somebody else was going to feed them and give them a place to stay. The problem is, the person might have been relieved of the burden as the traveler. Their costs are going to be reduced, but the burden then shifts to the person who invites them in. Now, we're talking about some very poor people. We're talking about subsistence living people. We're talking about people who had enough for today, maybe. They did not have a Walmart or a Woods or anywhere like that to just go get what we need because we've got some folks coming over. This is their livelihood ongoingly for a year or more. And so they had to secure this, no refrigeration, none of that kind of thing. And so when another mouth came by to feed, this is a major sacrifice on the part of these people that showed the hospitality that Peter's talking about. So the burden shifted from the traveler to the person showing the hospitality. And they didn't have enough the way that it was. And in all likelihood, when this traveler came by, he has to have a place to sleep. And I say he without, again, being sexist, because the women didn't travel like this, okay? Far too dangerous kind of thing to do. But as they would go to the houses, this guy would have to have a place to sleep. Now, we're talking about a room. That's the house. No guest room, all right, anything like that. And so somebody in the house is going to have to give up their spot for the guy to come in and sleep if he sleeps inside. And then he's going to eat the food. And some of the animals are going to have to be put outside because the animals lived with them in large part. And that still goes on in most third world countries, something like that. And so Peter then is not talking about our definition of hospitality, social gatherings or potlucks or whatever, you know. That's not hospitality according to the text of this scripture. The text of this scripture is talking about meeting the need of a person in love. That's the hospitality that Peter is writing about here. And doing it without grumbling. Indeed, this was a sacrifice for the hospitable person. It wasn't cheap, had another mouth to feed, disrupted everything that's going on in the family. It was, to say the least, a major inconvenience for these folks in that day. I've got a little taste of this through the years on the several trips I've made to Latin America, to Bolivia, Brazil, Venezuela. Went to Brazil several times. And I was always impressed with the hospitality of those people. I was impressed with their faith, first of all, because they had nothing. But because they had Jesus, they had everything. And that's the way they lived. And you would go, and I'll never forget one trip to Puerto Suarez, Bolivia. It's over on the eastern boundary or border of Bolivia. There's only one road going to civilization, and it goes to Santa Cruz, which is hundreds of miles. And when I say road, think about the poorest Polk County gravel road you can think of and multiply it times 10. Okay? And there's just this town out there, pretty good-sized little town. And so I was there, and it was a revival service for this Baptist church in Puerto Suarez, Bolivia. And so there were people, believers, who lived about 20 miles outside of town. And so they couldn't come to the services. I mean, it'd be a two-day walk to get there and a two-day walk to get back. So we were going to take the revival to them. So the pastor of the church and a guy was driving a car, and I think there was maybe one other person. We get in this guy's little Volkswagen Rabbit, and we head out to this house, okay, where some believers met, out in the jungle. Now, don't think African jungle, but think just desolate trees, brush, you know, that kind of thing. Nobody lives out there. And so But there's a group of people who literally, like a New Testament house church, would come together and worship in this house, this guy's house. And so that's where we were going. Blew the engine on the Volkswagen Rabbit, okay? And the guy that owned the Rabbit, which was a big status symbol for him, apologized because we had to wait for a car to come to get us from the other place. That just broke my heart. Well, we get out there, okay? And so we start the service. No electricity, all right? What limited light we had after dark was candles and lamps. And they provided a meal. And I noticed that the only people eating was the pastor, myself. The guy was working on his Volkswagen Rabbit, so he didn't eat. And the guy that came to, you know, help us sing. The people who live there aren't eating. And I thought, how strange. And so I asked the preacher, the pastor, afterwards, I said, why were we the only ones eating? He said, because you ate their food that was reserved for that day. I said, they didn't eat? He said, that's right. You ate at their expense. Now, he wouldn't make me feel guilty because I tried to pay the next place where we went and that was happening, and I insulted the host tremendously. I got a taste of hospitality. And it was literally a one-room building. And there was the only heat they had was if they started a fire, campfire in the floor. And it didn't have floor because it's dirt. And I'll never forget, just as I was waxing eloquent in the teaching time, this big old sow just walks through the service. She had to weigh 300-400 pounds or more, okay? She lived there. This is her house. But when I was told that those people gave up their food so that I, their guest, would be able to eat at their house, that broke my heart. But as I was looking at this passage, I know what Peter's talking about when he's talking about hospitality. All right. That's the context. Let's finish with the command. Peter is telling us, as a person changed by the gospel, show hospitality to one another without grumbling. Now, you'll notice one another. I believe this is fairly strictly in the context of one another believers. Okay, other believers. I don't think this is licensed to go out and invite everybody and, you know, it's walking by and everything, you know, come on in, free food here, that kind of thing. That's not what he's talking about, if we stay true to the context of this passage. So he's talking about one another, other believers. And I have to be honest this morning and caution you at this point. In 2018, the day in which we live, be careful about who you invite into your house. Be careful who you invite into your house. Because when they come into your home, they invade that home status that you and your wife or husband and children have developed and built. You say, well, I think you're saying too. No, no, no. Folks, I have watched through the years significant carnage occur in families that was initiated by a person that they invited into their house. And I'm not talking about they tore up the furniture and stuff. I'm talking about they tore up the very fiber of that family, such that that family ceased to exist in the months after they left. Then we have to deal with the, what are they going to teach or present to our kids and our spouse while they're there? my caution is be careful. These are dangerous times and there are dangerous people. And I say that fully knowing we live in the day of the couch surfers. You heard that terminology? Some of you folks like me, gray-headed or bald-headed and all, you say, what is he talking about? They're swimming in your house? No. Okay. These are people, okay, who are going to such and such a place. Who do I know there, or who do I know that knows somebody there? And they'll call up and they want to couch surf, sleep on your couch. All right? So they don't have to do a motel or hotel bill. Okay? Hey! What is it they put out in front of the Belnor Motel? No vacancy. All right? You say, well, you're saying you have to be hospitable. That's not hospitality. And if the Holy Spirit gives you a reservation about that person who wants to sleep at your house, sleeping at your house, heed the reservation of the Spirit and say, I'm sorry, that's not going to work. And if you need some scriptural basis for this, read 2 Peter chapter 2 when you get home. And you'll find out why I am cautioning. I'm not saying you don't. I'm saying be cautious about it. That home, men, is your responsibility to protect. All right? That is your responsibility. And you're responsible for the lives and welfare of your wife and your children. Now get out your sword, get out your shield, and fight to preserve your home. Be cautious, is what I'm telling you. Yet the command remains. Show hospitality without grumbling. I hear you, Peter. When you're shown hospitality, let's shift it a little bit. You're the traveler. When you're shown hospitality, okay? Be respectful of the host. Don't overstay your welcome, assuming you were welcome. Don't take advantage of the people there. Don't borrow their car for a week, and that, all of that's off the table. If you're the traveler in this case, pony up for the motel, eat at the restaurant, don't be a burden on those folks. But if it's absolutely necessary that you stay there or they won't hear of it any other way than that you stay at their house, then be respectful while you're there. What is really being said here is love others more than you love yourself, more than you love your stuff, more than you love your schedule, more than you love convenience. And if there is a true need in the traveler's life, then be hospitable without grumbling. Now, that may offend some of you. I don't know. But that's the only way I can pick up what Peter is saying in 65 AD and carry it down to 2018 and drop it on our lap. Because he does say it. It is still the word. I just think what it would mean might be different today than what it meant when he was writing. You try the spirits. You try the spirits. Let's pray.